Coming to you from out of the blue, a perspective on business, not just local, but the global view on things. My special guest, Victor Snyders, CEO of Skin Renewal, is in the house to catch up, to find out how things are looking. And Victor, you're looking younger by the podcast episode. I don't know how you do it, but whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Obviously, it's got something to do with Skin Renewal.
I think it's probably got more to do with what Dr. Maureen does for me. But yeah, it's great.
The good doctor. Well, listen, we're opening up the latest edition of Renewed Thinking right now. And the last time we connected, you had just done a world tour of sorts. I'm glad to hear you've been resting on the home front over the last couple of weeks and haven't been doing any heavy traveling, but you're getting ready to jet off again for another, I think, five trips in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, we got a number of conferences over the next few months in Germany, in France, in Dubai that we'll attend, and we'll look at new products, new technologies, just meet people from all over the world.
And do it in real life, face to face. I mean, it's one thing to jump on a webinar with 50 other little rectangles on a screen, but there's no substitute for actually getting out there and jetting off to see what's happening in person.
Couldn't agree with you more. It's a vital part. You know, we've got so used to doing online meetings and Zoom and all of that. But, you know, even locally, although we have management centers in Cape Town and Johannesburg, and they are continuously connecting over Zoom or Teams, whatever it is we're using on that day, we still encourage them to travel as well and to see each other. Because when people are actually face-to-face, the connection is totally different to being online.
Well, this is something that I think we appreciate more and more post-COVID, post-pandemic lockdown moment. But we're in another interesting moment of disruption. This AI age that we've entered, and something that we touch on regularly with these talks. I've been fascinated just before we started rolling the tape on this podcast. You were giving me a little preview of an interesting marketing integration, the way you've embraced AI on the social media marketing front and on the music front, which has, I'm just flabbergasted at how well you've done it and how well you've been able to integrate AI-powered music production to fuel your media output. Kudos to you and Dr. Maureen for being so forward-thinking and on the cutting edge of willing to try new things. You're doing it really well.
Thanks, Mike. You were partly responsible for this.
I'll take full credit.
So when I was last with you, we discussed this AI song that had set all kinds of records on Spotify.
Yeah, well, it was the Velvet Sundown, the AI band, I think it's called, and Dust on the Wind was the big track that got a lot of news outlets hot under the collar.
So after we discussed it in the last podcast, we went and we looked at now how did this happen? What technology did they use to create it? Because one of the challenges when we're creating social media content is that you need a soundtrack. If you've got a story or a reel or any video, even the stuff that we do on YouTube, you very often want a soundtrack. And you've either got to pay licensing fees to something that has already been created, or you've got to use the free stuff that is available on those platforms, and everyone is using the same stuff.
Yeah.
So you start sounding the same. And what we decided instead was to start creating music that was absolutely relevant, A, on the subject matter that we were speaking to, so helping in create the lyrics, so that the words of the song actually meant something. There was a great one that they did for Skin Renewal's 20th anniversary, which was all about that. And then also to do it in a style that is aimed at the specific demographic that you're trying to attract with that, with your imagery. So one of the things that we did and what I played for you earlier is a complete song that we did in Zulu.
When you said you'd done this, I thought, okay, well, let's hear how this turned out, because I couldn't imagine that the AI would have nailed it impeccably. But I'm astounded for a regionally specific South African language, and this is a company that's not a South African company, but they've they've trained obviously on a global, huge swathe of music data, and they've been able to get pronunciation. This is sentence structure. This is vocal delivery. I would never have said it was an artificial, an AI, a robot. That goes above and beyond just talking about the actual production, the richness of the production, the harmony, the mix, the balance of the whole thing. But that lead vocal singing in isiZulu, then switching to English, and then going back so flawlessly, I'm really gobsmacked. Wow.
Look, one of the interesting things of that is that you don't get that result by putting in a prompt and then getting a song.
I would imagine it's an iterative process.
Absolutely. You shorten it, you change it, you change the beat, you change the style, you introduce harmonies, you change the chorus.
So you have to be a producer, a music producer.
You actually have to do that. And Dr. Maureen, for her, this is now a major hobby.
Wow.
Instead of doing needlework or hitting the sewing machine or something else, she's sitting in the evening producing music. And she's absolutely loving it.
Forget the needlework. We're talking about needle drops here. the record needle. That's amazing. And 2 years ago, you couldn't imagine Dr. Maureen being the resident music producer in the Skin Renewal family. But here you are. But there's a human-guided production process delivering something that would have taken, I mean, the budget that you would have needed and the time you would have needed and the team you would have needed to do this a couple of years ago. Now it just collapses all of that.
Well, I fly Lyft in South Africa, and one of Lyft's little quirks is that after the plane lands and is taxiing to the docking station, they always play their song, Lift Me Up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great song, but there's an identity now. That song belongs to Lyft. It tells you about Lyft. It's going up into the sky. It's visiting countries. It's being all over. And it's become a part of their brand. And we simply thought, well, why don't we do this? But we don't have the kind of budgets to hire musicians and studios and go into the production because it's an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
And AI comes along and takes care of it for us.
It's such an interesting, from a marketing perspective, such an exciting possibility that it opens up. If you were a session musician, I would imagine it's less exciting. It's quite scary that you might be replaced and you wouldn't need to be hired for a couple of hours to lay down that particular bass line or drum track or whatever it is. But that is part of the wave of disruption that is going to, it really is rippling through all industries to a greater or lesser extent.
Well, one of the things that this opens up the potential for is to take a song like this that we then created, and we've done now close on 100 different songs on all different topics.
100 different songs?
Yeah.
Wow.
And some are related to skincare, some are related to sun protection, some are related to weight loss. There are all kinds of things. Some are related to the business, to the people. So there are all these different subjects, but if you manage to find one song which becomes quite iconic, we can actually go and get that recorded by a real artist. And they could, in theory, even release it. Because what's interesting with the AI, you've got the song now, which has got vocals, backing vocals, drums, guitar, piano, etc., etc., etc. But AI can generate the music score for each one of those instruments so that you could play it in real life.
That's so exciting. Creatively, the possibilities have become unlocked, not just in music, graphic design, copywriting, any aspect of the media production pipeline right now can be enhanced, accelerated, and give you so many more, what do they call it, shots at goal. You can get to that end result so fast now, and you can decide, okay, well, I wasn't quite looking for that. Let's see if we can do another pass and take it in a very different direction. And you can suddenly have three or four options to choose from in the space of time it would have taken you to generate maybe one in the past.
So I'll give you another example of something that's actually happening right now in our lives. Our home in Cape Town, we want to do an extension and a renovation. As you know, I'm an architect. So I sat and I drew up the plans and whatever. But then Dr. Maureen doesn't think in the same way as me in three dimensions and isn't able to turn a plan into something that she can imagine being in that space. So as an architect, what you do is you go and build a model.
Get the balsa wood and the...
So I have, over the last 3-4 weeks, bit by bit, whenever I had some time available, been using cardboard and balsa wood and all of those things, making a model of the house. 2 nights ago, I'm on the net, and I discovered that Google has brought out a new AI tool called Nano Banana.
Oh, I've been playing with the Nano
and
Banana.
Now, all I need to do is put the plan into Nano Banana, okay? It will generate a 3D isometric. It will then create an STL file, and I can go and print the entire model on a 3D printer. And I could have saved myself 3 weeks of work and had something that's a little more professional than my thing with the cardboard, the sticky tape, and the balsa wood.
Hey, listen, that's an artisanal sculpture you've created. No machine's going to copy that, but your point is taken. That is, again, another possibility that if we'd been talking a year ago, would have seemed a bit too science fiction. You could imagine that maybe in 10, 15 years from now, maybe we'd get there. Things have accelerated so quickly since we started this podcast series to now. The exponential rate of advancement and change is so rapid that it's absolutely impossible to know where we'll be in a year from now.
Totally. So one of the things we've now done is we went and bought ourselves a 3D printer so wow. that we can now, and it's not so much for the house renovation, what it is seeing the ways that we can use that 3D printer within the business to wow. help create things. And it is unbelievable what you can do and create with 3D printing. It just opens up an entire new world.
So this is something that I've kind of thought about since we've started these conversations, because you have always had a very open outlook on early adopting and getting stuck in with new technology, even when it's kind of still getting its kinks worked out. You're very proactive in trying out the new things and seeing how you can work them into your operation. I see skin renewal as much as it's a medical aesthetics business, I almost see it as a technology business in a sense, because you are so progressive in your adoption of new technologies and trying to figure out ways to apply them to enhance everything that you do, which is ultimately for the value add and the benefit of your customers.
Yeah. You know, this really comes out of something that happened when I was a youngster. So when I went to university, computer science was not yet a course at university.
It was science fiction.
It was science fiction and wasn't being taught as a qualification or as a degree. I remember in the 1 year we had to do a module on computer programming, which was using punch cards. And you had to take a simple equation. We had to punch through, I don't know, something like 300 or 400 different cards,
whoa,
take them to the computer center. Then they would run that in the system. It was all done in a language called Fortran. Then we could come back the next day to get the answer to the equation that we'd put in.
The next day?
The next day. And I forgot about all of that, and then I started work. And two things happened when I started working for the first time. We got the very first CAD systems, that's computer-aided drafting,
wow,
which was all done by draftsmen beforehand. So now there were computer systems that could do the drawing. And the other thing is that Apple computers came out, the very early Apples, the ones with the green screens.
These were personal computers.
And I sat there after having been at university for 7-8 years and learned how to draw and learned maths and equations and all sorts of things. And I looked at this and I thought, pal, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get on top of this, within the next 2 years, you're going to become superfluous. You will be a relic. So it was not out of curiosity, it was more out of a sense of survival, that if we don't adopt this technology and understand it, we will simply become irrelevant over time.
That was an impulse, an instinct, a realization that you had back then.
It was the fight or flight mode. I realized I was in trouble because a machine, And this was back in the early 1980s, late 1970s. A machine was going to take over my job. And in order to survive, I needed to understand the machine so that I could be the one who drove the machine. And that was it. And it was, we went out and bought a computer. We had no idea how to program a computer or anything. The computer arrived. It still had floppy disks.
Wow.
So this computer arrived, and there were two slots with floppy disks, and I put up a screen, and it was green, and it had a C and a colon and a prompt arrow. And I thought, no, well, I don't want the computer to have a C. I want it to say, if you press 1, go to a spreadsheet. If you press 2, go to a word processor. So we just started learning as we went, and as a result, we were on board very, very early. This is the days before Excel, when we were still using Lotus 1-2-3 to do spreadsheets.
Yo.
So there, and that became a lifelong hobby. And if you once you're on a computer, you have to upgrade. You have to go to the newer version. You have to, otherwise, once again, you become irrelevant. So you just get swept up in this tsunami of innovation, and either you go with it and see whether you can harness it and tame it and start using it, or you get left behind and you get drowned in the tsunami.
Well, you've definitely been surfing the tsunami since then, and you haven't fallen off yet. Your paranoia at that stage being replaced by a machine was well-placed, but you were probably ahead of your time. Now the prospect of being genuinely replaced by an AI agent in a lot of career paths is absolutely legitimate. There are functions and whole workflows that can be handled by a silicon-based entity. We are just now, I think, starting to appreciate the scale at which the world is going to be dealing with a huge displacement of labor, and the great ripple effects of this industrial revolution are going to become evident soon.
So the ways that one is able to use these systems but still make it relevant to what people are, and we can take a lot of examples out of our own lives. I'm sure that you, me, many of the listeners have had to phone a call center of the bank, of Telkom, yeah, of MTN, Vodacom, any of these companies, and they all have call centers. And the telephone get answered. And the first thing is it has to read you this whole monologue of this is being recorded for quality purposes and whatever. You've got something you want to talk about, but now you have to listen to 2 minutes of garbage for them to legally be allowed to talk to you. And then you start getting a menu. If you want this, press 1. If you want this, press 2. And many of these menu systems land up in dead ends, and then you get cut off.
Yeah.
So now you have to re-phone again and try and navigate the system in a different way. And you can spend 10, 15 minutes just trying to get the information you want.
Yeah.
What you really want is just to talk to someone, okay? But people cost money. So these big companies don't use people to answer the phones. They use automatic systems, and we're seeing it in our field. So all over the world, people are now talking about automating the CRM process, the customer relations management, whereby people will be able to make their own booking, do their own queries, ask all sorts of things, and the robot will answer. As a customer, as a patient, I don't like that. I don't want to listen to the story of this will be recorded. I don't want to have to listen through an endless prompt of up to number 8, what I need to press, and then I've forgotten.
Yeah.
What was number 3, and then I've got to listen to it again. I don't want to get cut off. I want to talk to a person. So what we've done is, yes, we use those systems, but we don't use those systems to face the patient. We use those systems internally.
Okay.
So the phone will get answered by a human. The human will talk to you, and the human will operate that system behind the scenes to be able to pull the relevant information.
Mm, to support that function.
And people are still having the interaction. It's one of the sad things that really started with COVID and has increased exponentially since then, is that we're starting to lose human contact. If you look overseas, particularly in countries like Japan, where 30% of people that are below the age of 35 are not married and not considering getting married. They literally live in an apartment. They phone a system which delivers their groceries. Their relationships are all online and digital. And they've forgotten how to simply date.
Yeah.
Go to a pub and meet someone and talk to them and see whether there's some chemistry.
Apparently, Elon Musk pushed an update through his Grok AI not long ago. These virtual avatars, these sort of 3D dolls, if you will, that you can have a interaction with and a relationship. And he brought out one that was quite scantily clad, quite racy, and you could get it to respond in quite a flirtatious manner. Massive hit in Japan, because there you go. It's like a inverted commas human interaction, human relationship I can have without actually having to leave my apartment.
But what happens now is that one of the byproducts of this trend to move into a digital world is that birth rates in Japan have plummeted.
Yeah.
And you're now seeing for every two adults, only just over one child is being born. So sure. You're starting to get dropping birth rates, dropping population sizes.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is resulting in the pensions and the state thing and the retirement ages, all of those things being affected, because as other people are getting older and not enough young people are coming into the system to feed the system, whether it's a medical aid system, whether it's a pension system, a provident fund, a state provident fund, anything like that, eventually it will run out of money. And I listen a lot to a podcast with a guy called Professor Scott Galloway from the US.
Oh, Prof G. Yeah.
Prof G. And he's one of his side things beyond talking finance and the markets and economy is the role of the male. And he's quite simply saying that men have forgotten how to go to a bar, go to an event and talk to a woman because they're living these digital lives. And the effect is eventually it becomes an economic effect. So we've tried very, very hard in our business to always keep the human touch to things. We believe intrinsically that is what people are looking for.
And it's obviously a conscious decision that you have made as a business, as a brand, to put that human experience at the forefront, front and center, as part of your user journey, your customer interaction.
That's it.
A lot of businesses that are just sort of going with trends and automating as much as they can are kind of getting swept up and maybe forgetting about.
Well, to what extent can automation take place? We're projecting that in the next 10 to 15 years, things like neurotoxin injections, filler injections, can all be done robotically.
Actually by a robot. Absolutely. Administering the injection.
We're already seeing, for instance, hair transplants being done by robots.
Wow.
It's a repetitive task. It's got to plant 2,000 new hair follicles in a scalp, and you're positioned, and you're fixed in position, and the robot takes over and plants all of that hair.
Probably with an incredibly high degree of accuracy, laser guided and all of that.
Yeah. What goes out of that is the art of which way should the hair fall. Should it fall to the left or to the right?
Wow.
How do you deal with things? Those things they're still trying to figure out. But if we see injectables being done robotically in 10 to 15 years, people would, in theory, be able to go into a booth, just like as kids we used to go into one of those camera booths have four pictures of ourselves taken, but go and get your injectable treatment done in that booth. Now, is that what people want? Yes, there will be some people who like that instant thing. But the reality is what people are really looking for is the reinforcement of the injector, the relationship with the injector, getting to know the person. And when I ask ladies, would you let your hair get cut by a robot?
Yeah.
Nearly every one of them says no.
For sure.
And there will be machines that cut your hair robotically as well. But is that what you want, or do you want a hairdresser that you can talk to, that knows you, that knows your preferences?
It's really interesting to consider. I mean, and as we've talked about right now in this episode, how quickly things have progressed in the last year. It might be sooner than 10 years before those robots are on the home soil doing
Well, that's the really scary thing, is that the rate of change and of innovation is just accelerating. It's really exponential. Because if we go back 10 years, then it's nothing like today. But if we go back 30 years, it was another world.
Yeah.
And that speed of change is just coming so fast at us.
Yeah.
It's like being on a treadmill that just keeps going faster.
It's absolutely right. And I was listening to an episode of The Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett, not long ago, interviewing an AI thought leader, Mo Goddard, former executive at Google, the Google X program. He's become a big voice in the world of caution towards the way things are hitting AI in terms of regulation, in terms of what governments should be thinking about. And he was saying that, you know, right now everything's very focused around what's happening on the screen, but there's going to be another wave to this thing when the robotic output suddenly starts to catch up and you start to get these robots, physical things manipulating matter in our everyday. And, you know, beyond just washing your dishes and parking your car, if you have one, there's going to be so many ways this stuff starts to infiltrate business and life that we can't really appreciate it at this stage. But soon enough, and give it a year or two, we'll start to see the possibilities.
And if you look at the proponents of many of these systems, so let's take, for instance, autonomous driving vehicles.
Mm.
In the US, there are a couple of million truck drivers that earn their living driving trucks from A to B. In South Africa, we have plenty of truck drivers. You only have to go on the road from Johannesburg to Durban, and you will see the trucks.
Yeah.
Now, if those become autonomous vehicles, those truck drivers don't have a job.
Yeah.
Now, the proponents of the AI systems and of the vehicles saying, well, that's great, because those people will now have a lot of free time on their hands to do the stuff they want. But unfortunately, they can do what they want, but they won't have the money to do anything because they need to generate a form of income.
So this is what I want to ask you, because you're one of the most well-traveled and well-informed people I know. With that scenario in mind, that's just one sector. And if you imagine that displacement now mushrooms out across a whole economy, do you foresee in the decades to come this concept of UBI, universal basic income, becoming a potential reality? Look at, like you said, Japan. If you've got a situation where the birth rate's fallen so low and there's that you're not getting the replacement of the workforce that you had, and you've got now this sort of broken institution of a pension, and if the government has to say, all right, well, the rise of AI technology is kind of offsetting the loss of human labor, but for those humans that are now existing and sort of drawing on our services as a government, we're going to just allocate you like a government grant, basically a universal basic income. It's not going to be amazing, but you'll be able to get by. And to
Mike,
to
all you have to do is the maths. If you've got to pay a UBI, the government has to get that money from somewhere.
Yeah.
If they have less people paying tax,
well,
okay, then the only way they can pay people is by pushing tax rates up.
For those that are paying.
To a point where it becomes uneconomically viable to even work, because you would be paying so much tax to sustain those people that are not able to work. The maths predicates against it. You will not be able to do that.
Unless there's just such wealth generation for the
Now, if you're in a country which is an energy-based economy like Dubai or Saudi Arabia, where you have vast reserves which are going to last 40, 50, 100 years, and you can generate income for the government that way to provide a UBI, fine. But if the government funding does not come out of resources and it comes out of labor, which is tax, income tax paid by individuals, income tax paid by businesses. If that is diminishing, then you cannot do a UBI.
That's
And, you know, what happens, we all like the idea of being on holiday.
Mm.
Okay? So you take a week off, 2 weeks off, you get a rest. But if you have 6 months off, okay, and you don't have a routine of waking up, going to do labor, and creating something and getting the satisfaction, because to me, work is a privilege. Okay, it's a gift being able to work because you are producing something.
Yeah.
It may be physical, it may be emotional, but you are producing. Now you're not producing. Where are we as human beings going to go when we are not being fulfilled in that we produce something?
Yeah. There is a profound problem there and a looming mental health crisis.
Absolutely. And we're already seeing that all over the world, where mental health has become a far bigger issue than it was 10 years or 20 years ago.
Sure. And, I mean, just the COVID lockdown moment, the sort of collective trauma that so many people experienced in that moment, not being able to work, not being able to earn, possibly losing their job or their business and having to come through all of that, maybe now starting to get back on your feet and you're finding that suddenly the whole playing field is shifting again. There's going to be a lot to reckon with, I think, on that front. It's something that businesses are going to have to think long and hard about, and how do you look after your people as well. And I know that as a very people-centric business, these are things that you grapple with and trying to support your team as well during these turbulent times to look after your people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the people are the key to the business and the quality of the people. The success of our business is due predominantly to the people that work in the business. And we have an obligation to them to look after them. Mm. They are dedicating their time, for which, yes, they get paid, but they are putting their trust in us, that we are running the business in a way that their job is safe. It generates them sufficient income to do the things they want to do. They decide to have children, which they know that they can afford. They decide to buy a car, which they know they can afford. They decide to buy a house, which they know that they can afford, because they are dependent on the business. So we have a huge responsibility to those staff members to live up to their expectations and the trust that they've put in us.
It's not something you take lightly, obviously.
Absolutely not. It's the reason we get up every day, because it's not just the patients that we see. It's the people who work in the business. Those are the people that we want to transform their lives to.
Wow.
But we transform them in a different way. But number one is building that level of trust. But you have to live up to it.
Yeah.
If your staff see that you're looking at developing systems which make them superfluous and that their jobs are at stake, then either they will leave or they'll be the last rats on a sinking ship.
Yeah.
And we don't want that ship to sink.
So the way that you're doing it is very deliberately and responsibly integrating the systems that make sense, but that support the human roles,
yeah.
Empower the human roles, upskill the people in those roles without making them redundant or expendable.
Yeah. So in our business, in all the areas, we've used AI, and we use it in virtually every division of the company. We made one strategic decision that none of the AI will be patient-facing. All the AI will be used inside the machine to make the machine more efficient, and it will never cost a job. It will simply be that we are able within the business to repurpose people and upskill them to be able to use the AI to get faster results, more efficient results, more cost-effective results, which will eventually filter down through the balance sheet and the income statement to their remuneration.
Wow. So that's like a foundational manifesto, if you will, a sort of
absolutely
statement of intent at the very beginning of this exercise to say, let's just be clear about the ground rules here. This is how we're going to do this thing, and let that be a guiding light that we keep coming back to.
Yeah.
The intentionality of that for me is impressive. Let's just understand, who are we? What are our values? What are we all about, really, foundationally? And how do we make sure we protect that and ensure that we don't get caught up in the frenzy of just doing the new thing for the sake of doing the new thing, so that we don't get left behind, the FOMO of it all?
And, you know, none of this is innovative on our part. We're just simply copying guys who've come before us, like Richard Branson said, if you look after your people will look after your business. So, you know, that was something that we'd started 20 years ago, and we look after our people. So they will look after the business.
I think it's also really reassuring at a time of such rapid advancement and change, constant change all the time, to see an example where these strongly held foundational principles that have served you for decades are still in place, still at the core of what you're doing, still serving you, and to show that there is something that stands the test of time. You don't have to constantly throw out the rule book and start from scratch. There are pillars of integrity that will, if you implement them, if you stay true to them, they can guide your success through hell and high water.
Well, you know, if we just go back through a number of the podcasts that I've done with you, and we go right back to the beginning, one of the very first podcasts was establishing the why.
Mm.
Why are you in this particular business? And that becomes your foundation.
Yeah.
If that why is to make money, well, then people are superfluous. Then the only objective is make money. And if we sacrifice a few people in the process, bad luck. At least I've achieved my objective, which was to make money. But if your objective is to grow people and to care for people, then you have to make decisions differently. So as long as you always go back to that foundation and that why, then your business will be on track. You've got to learn how to use the technology and the advancements that we sit with and incorporate those into your why.
Yeah. And with all of this in mind, for someone listening to this podcast who maybe has been thinking long and hard about branching out on their own, doing their own thing, maybe they've got a strong sense of purpose and a why, and are thinking of maybe now using these AI tools to help launch their new thing. Do you have any sage advice or any encouraging word?
Having failed many times, I have a file of school fees that I've paid. Yes, and the answers are in there. Very important, get that why right.
Yeah.
Number two, make sure that you're getting the right legal and financial advice. Okay, if your cousin did 1 year of law, that is not the person to get advice from. Okay, you need a proper financial professional, you need a proper legal professional to make sure that those things are absolutely set up. Then you can start going further. But yeah, I was listening yesterday, I was in Johannesburg and I had 702 on, and the DJ was talking about the opportunities that she had missed in her life, where she saw. She came up with an idea which she didn't implement, and it could have made her a lot of money. That was her words. And it jarred for me because she was seeing those as opportunities to make money instead of improve the human experience. And if she had been driven by that, she probably would have implemented those things and not been a DJ. But instead it was all about, I could have made lots of money. If she had said, I could have changed lots of lives for the better,
wow,
then she probably wouldn't have missed that opportunity. And that's why the why is so important.
And it's really interesting when you talk, when I talk to people like you, or others that have a strong sense of purpose and of the impact that they are aiming to achieve, totally unrelated to the financial upside of what they're doing. If that initial impulse is followed through with total conviction and energy, the financial success, as you've highlighted before, comes as a byproduct,
yeah,
of doing that mission really well.
Yeah, I would say as well, an advice to anyone who is going to start a business, go and read Simon Sinek's book, Why.
Start with that one. Start with why.
Very, very important one, because that'll get you at least on the right starting point.
Orient your compass correctly.
That's it. Find your North Star.
Man. And for those who are now maybe heeding that advice and thinking, okay, well, maybe I can't get a financial or legal expert in my corner just yet, would you caution against using the next best thing as ChatGPT?
You know, I think that it's still got a long way to go. I had this discussion with our attorneys recently.
Oh, yeah?
So things like I was drawing up a shareholder agreement, and I could get that done by ChatGPT.
Like pretty well done.
Yes, very, very competently done. Does it have every one of the nuances that related to our business?
Ah.
Did it interrogate me to say, have you thought of this or that? Should we include this? What happens if I needed a human interface? So good legal firms would be using AI to help them become more efficient, okay, but not as the final product.
Yeah.
Because if I go to my attorney's office and I'm sitting talking to a computer there and the computer is generating it, then the feeling is, why am I at the attorney's office? I could be using my own computer. And I'm losing that ability to, for it to interrogate me,
yeah,
as to whether I'm on the right track or not. Because remember, that the AI will only do what you tell it to do.
And you, if you don't know what to tell it.
And if you don't know what to tell it and what questions to ask it, because you're inexperienced.
Then there you go. You don't know what you don't know.
You know, you want to go into a business. You're setting up a partnership with a friend or a family member, so you want a shareholders agreement. Okay, what happens if one of us wants to sell the business and the other one doesn't? If that is not in the shareholders agreement, then you're going to land up in a big argument like a divorce.
Yeah.
Divorces are easy to manage if antenuptial contracts are in place.
Yeah, but if not?
If not, they turn into a bloodbath. And so it is with companies as well. If one person wants to take on debt in a partnership and the other one is debt averse and does not want to take on debt into the business, and there's a disagreement about how we manage this process, if that's in the shareholder agreement, you know how you're going to tackle it. If it's not, you're going to have an argument, you're going to have dissent, and then your two partners are going to be at loggerheads. And the company will suffer because their attention is on their fight with each other instead of their common mission.
Sure. So, first prize, get a good human to guide your legal
Absolutely.
Operation. And as a maybe starting option, get the chatbot going, but use with caution. A pinch of salt.
And always remember that the vast majority of systems are built on LLM models.
Mm. Large language
models. And they just simply regurgitate language that has been used before. Whether that was correct or not is immaterial. AI is not there to judge whether it's giving you the right answer. It's just giving you an answer that comes from somewhere that they have copied, repurposed, maybe added or deducted from, and regurgitated it to you, but it may not actually be correct. And there are many examples of questions that are being asked of AI where the answers that come back are, quite frankly, ridiculous. We are not allowing anyone in the business, and that includes myself, to cut and paste anything from an AI system direct to a patient.
So that's
cannot
another,
be done.
That's it another has, law that you've...
It has to come and undergo a human step as an absolute minimum, that a human sits and looks at that, edits it if necessary, amends it if necessary, and it can only be cut and pasted from what the human has created to put in, because then you also have a level of responsibility.
Yeah. Who signed off on that?
And that person knows what the message is they're trying to create. They know what they're trying to achieve. AI doesn't. I was just giving you an answer.
Well, while you're heading off now into travel mode to go and meet real humans and getting ready for what must be quite a physically taxing part of what you do, how do you recharge or staying energized and focused and sane?
Very, very easy answer. Sleep.
Oh, yeah?
The most important. It's the foundation to health and energy. You've got to be sleeping properly. I could not do the things that I do if I didn't get a really solid regenerative 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. So that is sacrosanct. I cannot function without that. If my sleep pattern goes, my level of productivity goes out the window with it.
Everything.
So being able to sleep properly, very, very, very important. And then eat responsibly, get fresh air, take the stairs, do your steps, stay active, stay mentally active as well.
And do you try and sleep as much as you can on a flight, or do you try and make sure that on the other end, when you touch down, you've got a good chunk of time set aside?
So I have a peculiar habit. I don't work on an aeroplane.
No, never work.
Never.
Wow.
Aeroplanes are either for relaxing or for sleep.
One of the two.
You can listen to music, you can watch a movie, you can go to sleep. I don't work on a plane. I rather arrive where I want to be, refreshed, clear-minded, and be able to work completely. If I work on the entire way on a flight to London, by the time I get to London, I'm useless.
That's obviously, it's a battle-tested strategy that's served you well.
It works for me. There are people who can get by on 4 hours or 5 hours sleep a night, and they survive. I can't. I need a solid night's sleep.
And do you find that you have had periods where you've battled to get into sleep mode, your mind racing and being so caught up? Do you have any routines or
So sleep hygiene, very, very important. The temperature you sleep at, what you're doing before you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Walker, I think, wrote the definitive book on sleep. I forget what it's called. Very, very good book about sleep hygiene and things to do. Don't expose yourself to the blue light of TV or a screen for at least an hour before you go to sleep. Sleeping at the right temperature, in the right position, all of those things. The other thing that he doesn't get to is, thankfully, it's something I learned. My mother was a yoga teacher.
Oh, yeah?
And as a result, I learned certain relaxation techniques as a kid. And I found my off switch.
Through the breath and that kind of thing.
So through breathing exercises and particular things, if you can access your off switch, then it stops that mind racing, because that's the worst thing. And I'll find it. Sometimes I go to bed and my mind is racing because I'm sitting with 3-4 different things and whatever. Then I simply categorize them, I put them into buckets, and then I go through the off switch module, and then I switch off. And it's amazing when you wake up how many answers you've got.
Because your subconscious has been...
Your subconscious carries on with it.
That's amazing.
But that takes practice.
I mean, often you're just on autopilot until your head hits the pillow and you've been, that screen, that phone is in your hand right up until that moment. And how is that affecting you? How many extra hours of sleep have you lost through scrolling and getting sucked into a device? And what could that be costing you in productivity and just general health and wellness?
And have a routine. You know, if one night you're going to bed at 8 o'clock and the next night you're going to bed at 2 in the morning and whatever, that becomes disruptive because your body's routine is being thrown out. So I have a very clear routine. I'm asleep by 9 o'clock and I'm up at around between 4 and 5 o'clock every morning. And that's my routine. And my body knows that routine. It's like kids. If you want wild kids, let them go to sleep whenever they want to. And you're going to have a lot of challenges in dealing with those kids. But once those kids get into a routine, they start automatically getting tired at the time that they are supposed to go to bed because their body is used to it.
Hey, man. Well, I'm taking notes here. I've got a little 4-year-old who's pushing all kinds of boundaries and seeing how much he can get away with. And I'm going to make sure that we keep the routine. And it's something that we've already cottoned onto and how important that is. And how we as humans actually need it. And not just as kids, but as you say, as adults, as high-functioning entities on the planet Earth. And a routine that I really enjoy getting into is the chance to have a chat with you every now and then when you're in town. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what new stuff you discover on your travels and what we can touch base with on the other side in the next couple of weeks.
Who knows what it will be, but it will be something.
I can't even begin to guess, but I can't wait to find out and to connect. And I've already taken some real nuggets of gold from this conversation, Victor. So thank you, as ever, for your informed opinion. And onward and upward. Let's do this again real soon. What do you say?
Absolutely. See you soon.
Renewed Thinking on Radio Life and Style. You heard it here.